now approaching. Junction at platform. Passengers, airport, please stay on board. Next stop, road station.
iOS helps you control which apps you share your exact location with. There's more to iPhone.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. At Mint Mobile, we like to do the opposite of what Big Wireless does. They charge you a lot, we charge you a little. So naturally, when they announced they'd be raising their prices due to inflation, we decided to deflate our prices due to not hating you. That's right. We're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
Hello and welcome to Wine Times, brought to you in association with the Sunday Times Wine Club. I'm Annika Rice and I'm here at London Bridge's Tap and Bottle Wine Bar with the Vice President of the club, Will Lyons.
Hello.
We're thrilled that joining us for a glass or three today is actor, comedian, writer and presenter Hugh Dennis.
Hello.
Hello,
delighted
Hugh.
To be here.
When I think of you, Hugh, I think of, well, obviously,
it's very nice that you
does.
Do think of me.
I do.
That's a tremendous start.
So frequently, because it's almost impossible not to if you watch
Is
television,
it?
Frankly. Mop the Week, Taskmaster, Not Going Out, Spitting Image, Outnumbered, all my favourite shows right there on that list. So thank you for, you know, squeezing us in. Angus Deaton, we can thank him for this.
Yeah. We belong to the same sort of Tuesday night football team.
And
every October, we go on this sort of supposed football tour where we play Tuscan and Umbrian hilltop villages.
It's charming thought.
Yeah, no, sort of charming.
It's worthy of some sort of documentary,
yeah,
I think.
Yeah.
Well, he was reminding me that you do still play football on a Tuesday evening. And the sides, like this sort of roll call of comedy. And presumably you're playing tonight and we're recording this on a Tuesday, so I have a huge responsibility to get you there on time.
Well, I tell you what, I'm not actually playing because I am recording something else tonight. I'm recording the Infinite Monkey Cage, for which I can't be drunk.
No,
not exactly.
So I've got a spittoon.
You've got your spittoon, but you do like to dig in with things that go on a long time because the football thing's been going a long time, hasn't it? And I'm thinking Outnumbered 5 series, Mop the Week 21 series. And, you know, you are a sort of who's who of all our best love programmes. I mean, my producer, Anya, is sitting there. Everyone's going, oh, ask him about Outnumbered. We'll get onto that. But none of it, I mean, nearly didn't happen, any of it, did it? Because after university and the Footlights and meeting Steve Punt and starting to do comedy together, you were very happy to get a job with Unilever.
Unilever would be a completely different kind of company.
You were very happy to get a job with Unilever and go and work in an office.
Yeah. Well, I came to comedy sort of very late at university. And this was at Cambridge. So I sort of got into Cambridge when I didn't really expect to, and spent the first year and a half feeling I was probably the most stupid person at Cambridge. And then I kind of, in my second year, I kind of, you know, sort of woke up, looked around and thought, do you know, I think you're fine. I honestly think you're fine. And started doing other things. So I only did comedy for a year. So everybody else, I mean, a lot of people go to Cambridge, I think, to do comedy.
Yeah.
And don't really mind about their
degrees. What was your degree in?
I was a geographer.
Oh, yes. So you didn't particularly go to do geography. Mind your own accent, went to do engineering.
Yeah, he was an engineer. I had three choices when I left, really. So I had a job at Unilever and I could have stayed. So I was offered a research place to stay doing more geography, which I decided not to do. Or, you know, Nick Hancock was in my year and Steve Punt was in my year of Footlights and they wanted to do it professionally. So I could have done that.
But you see, what I'm finding charming is you took the job at Unilever Monday to Friday, but then Steve Punt wanted you to kind of double up with him at weekends and do some comedy. So you managed to keep everything.
I know, but it was a sort of, it was a thing that couldn't possibly happen now, I think. So it wasn't long out of university. It was probably a year and a half or something. Steve and I were doing the Comedy Store. This is my memory of it. And Jasper Carrot, who Steve had been working with, writing, I think, came down to see us.
Yeah.
And said, would you like to do my show? on a Saturday night because it's live and we don't know if we're going to have enough stuff. So if you write a sketch a week, you might get it on. And this is where my head was at. So Steve went, oh, that's brilliant, because that's, you know, an enormous sort of viewership like programmes did at that point. It was like 12 million viewers a week or something. And it was on a Saturday. And he thought, that's great. That's 12 million viewers a week. And I thought, that's brilliant. It's on a Saturday. That means I can carry on working for Unilever.
Because let's face it, you were the brand ambassador for Lynx.
I was, yeah, the brand manager, yeah. I was the product manager for Lynx DH.
So did you write the sketch on the Saturday morning? Or did you
no,
think about
I mean, generally? If I'm honest, Steve wrote most of them because I was I was doing Lynx marketing.
And was it only when you were you and Steve were offered the Mary Whitehouse experience, because that was on a Wednesday, that you had a sort of career crisis and you had to go either, it's either Lynx or Mary.
Yeah, no, it was. And I genuinely didn't know what to do. So I was going to be sent abroad by Unilever. Yeah. Not as a punishment, by the way, as a sort of promotion. I was going to Japan or Italy for 3 years.
Yeah.
And I didn't know what to do. And I went to my boss and I said, I don't know. I really don't know what to do. Been offered this programme on BBC Two. But, I really liked marketing. And he said, I really don't understand what you mean. What do you mean you don't know what to do? But if it's a difficult sort of struggle, we'll give you a bit of leeway and we'll give you a sabbatical. So they gave, Unilever gave me an 18-month sabbatical.
To go off,
which I'm still on because I've never told them.
So listen, we've gone for South Africa.
Mm, yeah,
with
nice.
You because, and we're presuming you're not doing Dry January because that would be
awkward. No, I'm not
good.
Doing that.
Okay. What is your link then with South Africa?
Well, I've just been there a few times, really. So
that's
I've sort of travelled around it. I've been to the Cape a couple of times, I think, and then I've been up, I suppose it's, I should know this because I did geography, but
yeah,
I think
on.
It's...
Give us a north,
it's
give us
west
bearing.
Of Joburg. So it's the place called the Drakenberg Ridge.
He's going to be very happy with your choice, isn't he?
Yeah. Well, we're focusing on the Western Cape today.
Nice.
Like New Zealand, I think South Africa has a claim to being probably the most beautiful spot on the wine route outside of Europe. Probably within the world, actually. And I love that flight you take. It's always the overnight flight. There's only an hour's time difference. So there's no jet lag when you arrive.
Yeah.
And you sort of wake up and you just sort of see Table Mountain. You drop down to Cape Town. And it's the beautiful luminosity of the light.
Although
on the Western Cape, which is just was it raining?
When my daughter was about 10, I suppose, younger even, we went to the Cape, and on the way back, we took off from Cape Town, and we got to about 5,000 feet or something, and we thought, we're not going up anymore. This is really strange. We're not climbing.
And a bit wild.
And then there was a bit, and the pilot came on and said, look, unfortunately, a light has come on in the hold. Now, we're pretty sure it doesn't mean anything at all.
But you know that mountain range.
Yeah. but we're going to have to land again. And we thought, well, that sounds fun. And then he said, but we can't land for a bit because we're too heavy. Because we've got a full, all the tanks are full of fuel. So we're just going to have to go out over the Indian Ocean for a bit. And dump fuel.
Oh, God.
And that's what they did.
Yeah. So which near the Seychelles
sort of
awful. And all those lovely places you could have dropped.
But there was, so we flew round for, think about 4 hours. And they put the lights on so you could see all the fuel sort of flying out of the wing, which is awful.
Yeah.
But my daughter, the point of this story really is that as we took off, my daughter fell asleep. And she was asleep for the announcement. She was asleep for everything. And when we landed, she woke up and she went, oh, it's great to be back.
School tomorrow. I'm actually looking forward to it.
Yeah. God, no, I'm really sorry. We're just going to have to refuel and do exactly the same thing again.
Well, it's not even your first foray into sort of wine anyway, because, of course, did your series with Oz Clark.
I did, yeah.
How did that come about? I mean, how were the two of you put together?
He had just finished... with James May, I think, hadn't he? So I sort of took over from James.
I seem to remember it was quite boozy.
Yeah, it was. Yeah. I mean, I wasn't consuming any of it, but it was quite boozy. Once we went to this, when you get recognised, this must happen to you all the time, where you get recognised, but people can't quite work
out. Yes, they just stare at you.
And they sort of misremember. And we were at a beer festival in Manchester, and I got stopped by this sort of quite drunk guy who came up to me and he said, "You were in the first season of The Young Ones." and I went, I wasn't. I really wasn't. That's very kind of you, but I wasn't. He went, You were in it, the first season of The Young Ones. And I went, "No, I wasn't. I really wasn't. I wasn't. That was the sort of generation slightly before me. So it was kind of Aidan's and Whitmail. He went, You were in it." And I went, I wasn't in it. And he got quite cross. And in the end, he went, You were in it, the first season of The Young Ones. You go home and you watch it.
That's so funny. Someone did that to me recently. They came up to me and said, "We've never forgotten when you played Madame Thénardier from Les Misérables or in a musical number on ITV." And I went, "Thank you, but that really wasn't me because I don't sing or dance." Yeah. And I would remember that because I love Les Misérables. They went on and on about it. And I said, "Really, it wasn't me." They got out their phone and there I am, dressed as Madame Thénardier in full corset, black and tea, giving my all, and I'd forgotten it.
Really?
Does that happen to you?
Really? I'd like to say that doesn't happen to me.
I just find there's too many things to keep track of all the things you've done. But
Was it so traumatic that you've actually...
It was obviously so traumatic.
Blocked
but
it out.
I can't tell you how it had developed into quite a row between us with me absolutely saying that just wasn't me. Are we in danger of actually having a drink?
No, look.
Let's have a drink.
Yeah. So we're going south of Cape Town to start with.
And I may have said this before, but if you got a whole bunch of sort of wine enthusiasts together and you ask what are the two most exciting countries in the world that are producing wine at the moment, they'd probably say Portugal and South Africa. And I would definitely say South Africa. Because what South Africa does, it's that marriage between the elegance or the sort of restrained fruit of the old world and that ripe voluptuousness you get from the new world.
That's not a phrase. The restrained fruit of the old world I'm going to use.
Try and use it today at least three times. Yeah. You want to know.
I feel quite
bad. What does it mean, the restrained fruit of the old?
So we're heading down south from Cape Town, down to Hermanus. Yeah. Did you ever go to Hermanus?
I probably flew over. I was flying around there for a very long time.
I mean, Annika and I were talking this morning. These are some of the most southerly vineyards.
Thank you.
So we're behind that sort of small fishing village of Hermanus. And this is the 2022 Hamilton Russell Vineyards Chardonnay. Now, Hamilton Russell was set up by Tim Hamilton Russell, who was in advertising, and then taken over in 1994.
So the bloke was in advertising. That could have been you.
Could have had a brand manager.
Is he British or is he South African?
South African. They just do two great varieties, I think. They sort of major on two great varieties, Chardonnay and Pinot Noir. So the Chardonnay's, you know, sort of spiritual home is France and it's Burgundy. So that, you know, we are sort of 8,000 miles away down in South Africa.
Aroma,
yes, exactly. So if you're in your camper van, if you're in your camper van with Oz and you're driving out of Cape Town down to Hermanus, I mean, parts of it are like driving through Scotland. There's sort of pine trees and it's quite cool down there.
So it's the cooler.
It's the cool, and you've obviously got this sort of, you know, it's surrounded by the ocean. And like New Zealand and Sonoma in California, that acts as an air conditioner. So you get this sort of cool breeze coming in, coupled with that luminosity that you spoke about on the flight when they're dumping.
I think you spoke about it. Yeah. I don't think I mentioned
the
luminosity.
Word luminosity.
I'm not even sure I've ever heard that word.
And you've spoken before, like when we were with Paul Feig, the Californian wines, the salt.
So what's the balance then between the importance of climate and the importance of soil?
Excellent question.
Because there's no, because
we've waited 12 programs for
really.
Someone to say
so that. All the, you know, in I my very very basic understanding of these things is that wines are generally better where the grapes struggle a bit.
Yes,
aren't they? So they have to sort of force their way.
Yeah, you want to stress the vine.
You've got to stress.
So the roots grow longer and longer.
Yeah,
and then they have to suck up the water through the soil. Yeah.
Chalk is good,
but the best is limestone. Limestone is like the exterior that, you know, that imparts onto the wine that sort of finesse.
But does it also, because it drains so fast, limestone?
Yes.
So the grape is always struggling.
Yeah, exactly. So if you put your grape on good soil...
I think I'm doing quite well, aren't
I? Very good. Can I just say,
you did get a first.
8 out of 10.
Yeah, but it wasn't in
what was your geography teacher called?
Mr. Yates.
And can I just say, apart from name-checking Mr. Yates, can I name-check that we're in a wine bar in the middle of London? There's some drilling going on.
Yes.
The odd train. General chaos, in case you can hear...
It's a noise. Really good question, because if the vine is happy on good soil, it gets very lazy and the roots don't have to go down very much. And it will grow like a vine, or grow like a weed, sorry.
This is why I don't feed my children very much. It's the same principle.
I was at 100 Hills Winery in Oxfordshire, and the winemaker was saying to me that if you put it on bad soil, it will grow lots of fruit. Why? Because it wants to move. So the birds come along, take the fruit, and then pollinate it further afield. And that's why you want old vines, because you don't want your vines to be too vigorous. You want them to sort of prune them so they have less fruit, but the fruit should be very concentrated and very rich.
Yeah.
Now, he mentioned chalk, and we always think of Champagne. They always go on about chalk, and if you go to their vineyards, you've got the brilliant white chalk. Well, if you look at someone like Tasmania, which has, in my opinion, world-class sparkling wine, there isn't any chalk on that island. So it's... books have been written by viticultural scholars on this.
Do you regret asking that question?
No. I'm genuinely interested in the extent to which it's sort of, having worked in marketing, you sort of sense somehow in some of those stories of products and things that they are stories which have been developed because it sort of fits.
And it's a bit of both. And I know the French have a word for it called terroir. But essentially, it is the site selection and it's the climate. Because if you don't, what you want is a marginal climate. You want that diurnal temperature shift, so it's cool in the night and hot in the day.
But it's interesting you talking about branding, because I remember back in week one, I was asking you about that, the hype of the brand name, which when you're just the punter, just sort of buying, confronted with your rows of wines to buy in supermarkets. Will is now saying, don't go for the brand name.
Well, let's have a sip.
Okay.
I already did by mistake.
I'm sorry.
So
the beautiful thing about this is it has that lovely long dry finish, isn't it? Just beautifully
it's
long.
Very, it's lovely, actually.
And you can still taste it. But when I was talking about elegant fruit, I mean, and then you were like looking at me as I've had two heads, which is fair enough. But there is a restraint to that wine, isn't it, compared to, if you think of Chardonnays for the sun, from Australia, that they can have so much oak and creaminess and butteriness.
This is Wine Times with Annika Rice.
And Will Lyons.
We'll be back with more great wine and conversations before you even get a chance to top up your glass.
As you're listening to me, Daisy, Apple's iPhone disassembly robot, is dismantling an iPhone into lots of recyclable parts. That's how Apple recovers more materials than conventional recycling methods. Thanks, Daisy. There's more to iPhone.
When you're ready to pop the question, the last thing you want to do is second-guess the ring. At BlueNile.com, you can design a one-of-a-kind ring with the ease and convenience of shopping online. Choose your diamond and setting. When you find the one, you'll get it delivered right to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off your purchase. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
Even when we're on a budget, we still deserve nice things. Quince is a place to scoop up stunning high-end goods for 50 to 80% less than similar brands. They have buttery soft cashmere sweaters starting at $50, luxurious Italian leather bags, and so much more. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get the high-end goods you'll love without the high price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/style for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Well, should we try that second wine? Because we've gone red.
And we've got one of the Cape's oldest wine estates, Bochendahl. This was founded in 1685 by French Huguenots. But what's happening in South Africa recently So after apartheid, there was a lot of goodwill towards it, obviously, and understandably. But, you know, they've been behind this sort of, you know, they've always been cut off from the international community. So it's the younger generation of winemakers that have gone away. And, of course, your harvest in South Africa is between February and March, and the harvest in Europe is between September and October, November. So they've come back to Europe to do a harvest. It's what's called sort of flying winemakers. And they've learned all of the, you know, they're much more international. And they've gone back to South Africa. And they said, why don't we just push for quality? We've got this amazing geology here, this amazing sort of climate. And there's been this scramble for quality. And what we've seen is they're trying to make a more sort of European style, a more delicate, I want to say elegant again, but I won't.
Don't say elegant.
No,
so this is fruit from a cool climate region called Elgin.
And it's because Pinot Noir. It's cool, is that why it's very light and cool?
Yeah, it's sort of planted at altitude. But that's also part of the grape
variety. Why would that make it lighter?
Just does, Hugh.
Does it?
Yeah.
Well, if you think about the cool climate, it means the grapes don't get as, you know, massively ripe and rich as they would in a warmer climate.
A bit tighter.
But the actual colour comes from the grape variety, which is Pinot Noir.
It's very lovely. I like this very much.
Let's have a. And you can imagine this on your wine tour. Can you remember the food when you were there? Because I'm just thinking this wine
in South Africa.
Yeah, almost demands a sort of duck.
I think I was with two relatively young children, so yeah, I'm imagining so it was like macaroni cheese.
Chicken nuggets if on a good day.
Mainly.
You could have this with lamb. It would go really well.
Yeah, that'd be lovely.
Because you've said the word children again. Can we just talk about outnumbered? Because it is the elephant in the room, because everyone in this room, we all want to just talk about outnumbered, because we all find that we love it more than anything else. Very famously, you play Dad Pete Brockman, trying to raise your unruly three children with your wife, Sue, played by your real life wife, Claire Skinner. And everyone uses this word semi-improvised. Was it?
Well, it was. There was always a proper narrative arc. You had to have a beginning and an end.
Yeah.
And the adults essentially took that, and the adults were given a script, and we were told to not learn it very well, which is what I would have done anyway. It's absolutely perfect. But the kids really were improvising. And I think one of the reasons they were improvising was because it was very important that they sounded like kids. So if you're just, you know, using words of a middle-aged man who's written it, then that's not going to sound right. So they always had to find their own form of words, which is why it sounded realistic. But also, I think, because at the beginning, certainly Ramona, who played Karen, couldn't read, really. I mean, she was so young. Yeah. There was no point.
But did you have to run through the scenes and go, Karen, this is what we're going to talk about now, your drawing that you brought home from school or whatever?
Yeah, kind of. We weren't really party to that. So we would be waiting for a scene and you'd see Andy Hamilton off in the corner whispering with Karen. And you think, what's going to happen now? And then you would start the scene.
So he would give Karen the note. Karen is actually being more grown up than any of you lot, basically. She's having the whole responsibility of Andy Hamilton whispering her notes.
But I think it was,
This is outrageous.
Yeah, but I think it was, you know, they were given intention, weren't they? It was things like, you know, your dad wants you to go to bed, you don't want to go to bed. Yeah. Off you go. I mean, they were amazing.
They were. I mean, it is an extraordinary performance with all those three children.
No, it was. It really was, and it was a lovely. The whole thing had a very sort of lovely atmosphere. So we were in two houses. One was a filming house. Then the next door house was the green room house, and it was a bit like living in a commune, really, because there were people cooking for us, and the kids had. Kids had tutors there. And they
minders
had minders and, you know.
All these, I mean, Unilever's loss, frankly, isn't it? Looking back, so. I mean, they must
could have been.
And you could have been a spy. Can I just quickly ask you about
I don't think I could have been a spy. I certainly went to a spy interview.
What happened? Could you please tell that? Because actually, I did go out with a
Did he go out with a spy?
Who was recruited from Oxford for quite a few years.
Was he allowed to tell you he was a spy?
Even a dinner party, a Christmas dinner, where you'd go and meet all the other spies and their partners.
Oh, that's nice.
It was kind of...
But he could...
Considering they were all spying, the lack of security seemed a bit weird to me. But anyway...
No. Yeah, yeah.
But can you just tell me how
it
happened?
Why was it in the same way as it happened for him, actually? Just approached it.
But how does it happen?
Yeah. How do you get a tap on the shoulder?
Do you sit in a park bench?
Say, how's geography going?
Yeah, kind of. I mean, yeah, I can't quite remember. I think I was just sort of invited for a drink with a supervisor or a director of studies or something, thinking it was going to be about, you know, why my essay on the geology of the South Downs was so poor.
It's like a sort of curriculum activity, is it? You can
papier-mâché
on a Tuesday, or you could do spying.
So hand you a large sherry in.
Yeah, it's kind of. It was pretty much that sort of old world sort of approach to it. And so off I went. I went down to...
I'm surprised you couldn't have fitted that in with Unilever and a bit of Mary Whitehouse.
Well, how do you know I didn't?
I was just going to say that. How do we know that you're not?
What would I be spying on? This is what I...
But then, so when you eventually get the call from the James Bond team to say, could you come in, that would like to talk to you about being in James Bond, you must have thought, this is one hell of an arc.
Yeah. Yeah, except that in the James Bond film, I am the man who gives away the secret. I give away the sort of nanobot thing that threatens the world.
So the
spy people... everyone to know that in the film, in which I last 10 minutes, literally 10 minutes, and I get shot in the head, which I think you will understand now you've met me. But there's a whole scene where I'm going, I really don't think we can do this. I don't think we can do it. This threatens, we cannot possibly give it. We cannot do it. That all went. So I just go, that's fine.
And they get blown up.
Yeah, and the bloke who I sit next to at football, when I go to Arsenal, home games, he said, you got shot in the head. He said, have you never seen films like that?
But
it doesn't matter. If you give it to them or you don't give it to them, you're still going to get shot in the head. You could at least have tried to resist.
No. I've just suddenly remembered we're doing a wine podcast. Right, should we have some more wine? Sorry.
When you think of South Africa and you think of its grape varieties, you normally think of Chenin Blanc, but perhaps its most famous grape variety is a red grape variety called Pinotage, which was created in Stellenbosch in 1924 by Professor Perrault, who crossed two different grape varieties. One was Pinot Noir and the other was Sanso, which they used to call Hermitage. We didn't really see it until the 60s. That's when it sort of burst onto the scene. And this is the 2019 Bellamore Family Selection Pinotage from Stellenbosch.
Family Selection.
Yeah.
Will doesn't said, say which member of the family, because that would that would affect it.
It's very relevant. Will said to me earlier, you're going to love this one because it's rich and plummy and juicy. And I'm so predictable.
Rich, plummy, juicy.
But snooty sommeliers do look down their nose on Pinotage sometimes because it did have this sort of burnt rubber character,
and
a smoky character.
Smoky is good, but the smoke of burnt rubber is not quite
It's just
nice,
rich and ripe, isn't
well,
it?
Well, I love this. I love it. I don't mind it.
And this is what you want with your braai, you know, you've got all your red meats on the barbecue. And
grapes travel, so to speak? I mean, in Italy, for example, there's all the sort of Sangiovese stuff and all that. That doesn't seem to appear anywhere else.
Yeah, I thought we'd get Hugh down so we'd have some jokes, and we got some really intelligent questions here. Well, as you'd expect. Now, brilliant.
I was up till 4 a.m. revising.
I was thinking, when you said, do they travel, i.e. from the vineyard to the winery? So in the old, in the old days in New Zealand, that they would travel up to 100 miles to get to the winery. But essentially, that there are certain areas in the world, by trial and error, where certain grape varieties just flourish. Yeah. So Sangiovese is actually planted in other areas, but it just doesn't reach the heights that it does in Tuscany, in Chianti.
Yeah.
And the same could be said, on the flip side, I suppose, would be Chardonnay, which is planted everywhere because it's so easy to grow. All you need is a little bit of heat at the end of the growing season. That's why you see it everywhere. A grape variety that hasn't... Take something like Malbec, which was only traditionally cultivated in the southwest of France, in the sort of Cahors region. And then it was taken to Argentina And it had this completely new lease of life. And it got this sort of darker, fresher character. So great varieties do travel, but not all great varieties travel. And not all great varieties travel well.
Yeah.
In fact, I once wrote a column about that, and it was the only column that Tony Lathwaite, the founder of the Sunday Times Wine Club, wrote to me saying, that's a brilliant column.
Oh, right.
Yeah. Because it's a really good question. So not all grape varieties travel well, but most grape varieties do travel.
Is there a resistance to it as well, is what I also mean. Is there a sort of, is there sort of national pride?
Yes.
Does South Africa have a pride in developing?
Well, mainly in the old world. Because if you think about France and Italy and Spain, you've got generations. You know, you've got domains that are, you know, it could be the 11th, 12th, 14th generation.
Yeah.
And for their, you know, for the person in charge, who's, you know, the young daughter or son who's taken over, it's a pretty bold step to say, hang on, we're not going to plant Pinot Noir. We're going to plant Sangiovese, yeah. Dad and granddad or grandma. So there is this pride, yeah. But what we're seeing now is this huge sort of experiment. I mean, that's a great thing about the sort of Southern Hemisphere. You have this huge great wave of experimentation where they just plant everything. And essentially that's what happened, you know, 200 or 300 years ago. Everyone would just plant everything.
To see what
yeah,
worked.
So you plant Merlot and Riesling. And then you would just see which, by trial and error, which thrive and which land.
It's like your career, Hugh.
Yeah, no, exactly.
It's just
a bunch of stuff.
Oh, Hugh. So, listen, thank you so much for coming along today. What's been your favourite wine? Haven't you actually drunk this one yet?
Oh, right. Let's have a sip.
I've been talking too much.
So again, that sort of wave of dark fruit, isn't it? That sort of...
It's very drying, though, isn't it?
Very dry with that tank, because it
needs... incredibly drying.
It needs that sort of big, rich, fatty meat. What happens is you would get this wonderful reaction where the tannins react with the fat and just sort of smooth it out, and it dries out. Dries out your mouth.
You're making it sound less attractive now.
Tannins, you
slightly.
Know.
Just... Yeah, I do. It's funny because fat. I used to. If we were having a dinner, I would say, "Let's all taste these wines before dinner."
Yeah.
Which is your favourite? And then over dinner, you'd ask a question again, and I bet that just transforms with if you serve it with the right meat.
Mm. Yeah, I think the middle one,
yes.
The name of which I have forgotten.
The Pinot Noir from Appellation series.
This is the this is from Boschendal. This is their Elgin Pinot Noir, 2018. Yeah, it was very.
And it's called Elgin because it's like Elgin in Scotland.
The region, yeah. It might be named after Lord Elgin. I'm not sure, actually.
Of marbles.
He got around a bit, didn't he?
He lost his marbles.
But certainly if you, as I was saying, if you drive down from Cape Town to Hermanus, you could think you're in Scotland.
Yeah, perhaps Elgin just sort of borrowed the grapes vines from somewhere else.
Well, they're all delicious, aren't they?
Yeah.
They're all completely delicious.
And what's great about South Africa is it's there's value on all levels. So from £5, from £3, there are some supermarkets in the UK now selling South African. I'm thinking of Lidl and Aldi.
What's been the most expensive today?
Well, the most expensive was the first one, which was Anthony Hamilton Russell's Chardonnay.
Yeah.
But he's competing with the very best Chardonnays of the world.
So has he had to put his price up to...
Yeah, well, there's a lot of work goes into
others,
it. So there's some, you know, if he would talk about reducing the yield in the vineyards. They're reducing the amount of fruit that they make. I mean, new French oak barrels that he has to buy, pay his winemakers and viticulture properly, and then export.
And why do they have to have French oak?
There's two different types of oak. Well, there's three, but there's Hungarian as well. But let's start with American oak imparts this really creamy coconut character. And French oak is just slightly more restrained. So it gives it, you know, like a suggestion of that buttery character as opposed to a big wallop of that.
And the Hungarian oak, you would Tokaj Hungarian.
Yeah, I think the Hungarian oak, if I'm right in remembering correctly, has a more nutty, spicy character. But it comes from the local, there are only a few forests in Europe where you get these. And certainly in Burgundy, you know, the coopers who make these barrels are, you know, the winemaker will go and see the cooper to select the barrels. And then they slightly char them on the interior to give it that sort of smoky character.
And do even the most modern sort of innovative winemakers still use oak? Do you have to use oak?
You don't have to use oak. So you can make unoaked, which is a very clean, vibrant flavour.
What would you put that in?
The big thing now, either aluminium or concrete. And the big thing now is to use these sort of eggs and four-eye eggs, which you see in all these sort of the great wineries of the world. And they impart a sort of a certain finesse to the end product. Yeah.
Mm. When you're with Angus, not this Tuesday, obviously, because you're doing some work, when you're with him next Tuesday on that football pitch, you can share notes. You can share information, knowledge, or not.
Well, I'll be talking to him about the influence of soil type.
Oh, well, Hugh, thank you so much.
Thank you. It's been a
joy.
Privilege.
Is there anything we should know about that you're about to do next week that's about to be on Netflix?
No, I don't think so.
Kick myself for not asking.
No, I don't think there's anything coming out. That's what's rather lovely about doing this podcast, actually, is that quite often on podcasts you're on to promote a thing.
Yes.
We don't have to do promotion at all. We can talk about anything. Oh, Hugh, thank you. We really appreciate you coming in from your, well, obviously not doing anything at all, so it hasn't been much of a hardship for you at all to fit in.
It's been really fun. I'm just going to be wandering around London for the rest of the day now. Good, yeah. Ooh. That's good.
Well, that's it from us today. Thank you very much for listening to this episode of Wine Times in association with the Sunday Times Wine Club. The series producer is Anya Pierce, the producer Callum McRae, and the assistant producer has been Shana Johnson.
You can follow the podcast so you never miss an episode. Just do this via your favourite podcast app.
We'll be back next week with more delicious wines and another great guest.
And remember that all of the wines we tasted today are noted in the episode description. And you can get your hands on all of them from the Sunday Times Wine Club website.
But from all of us here at the Tap and Bottle, thank you very much for listening. We hope to see you next week for more Wine Times.
As you're listening to me, Daisy, Apple's iPhone disassembly robot, is dismantling an iPhone into lots of recyclable parts. That's how Apple recovers more materials than conventional recycling methods. Thanks, Daisy. There's more to iPhone.
Imagine the softest sheets you've ever felt. Now imagine them getting even softer over time. That's what you'll feel with Bowl and Branch's organic cotton sheets. In a recent customer survey, 96% replied that Bowl and Branch sheets get softer with every wash. Start getting your best night's sleep in these sheets that get softer and softer for years to come. Try their sheets with a 30-night guarantee. Plus, get 15% off your first order at bowlandbranch.com. Code BUTTERY. Exclusions apply. See site for details.